Hi, everybody, and welcome back to episode 7 of Extra Pickles, Please. This thing is about to crash out on me. Hold on. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to episode 7 of Extra Pickles, Please. I fear it has been way too long. I can't tell you the last time I aired an episode, but gonna be so honest, your girl's been busy. I had two weddings in a row. I have been on 8 different flights in the last week and a half. I have just been Mr. Worldwide for the last 2 weeks. So I'm so sorry, but we are so back. I got some content lined up for y'all. I'm cooking in the kitchen. It's gonna be great. First and foremost, want to shout out to all my AAPI brothers and sisters. Happy AAPI month. It's our month. It's our month. Today's topic actually coincides with AAPI month. As mentioned in the title, it is called Healing in Translation, Asian Mental Health During AAPI Month. I'm going to talk about mental health within the AAPI community while also sharing some of my own personal stories and the similarities and differences that I share with a lot of my AAPI brothers and sisters. So let's go ahead and just jump right into it. Today, I want to start off by deconstructing the stigmas around Asian mental health. I hope that this episode speaks to a lot of my AAPI listeners, because I feel like there is somewhat of a shared experience amongst us all. Let's just start off with the cultural stigma around mental health. As we know, it does not exist in our communities. There is shame in what we call shame and face culture. So in this with this ideation, many Asian cultures emphasize saving face and not showing any type of vulnerability. Growing up, you've probably heard the term saving face a lot. Saving face goes hand in hand with that idea of like bringing honor to your family, making sure that you're not seen as like quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes right now, the bad kid, which could then lead to discouraging folks who are seeking mental health care because there is shame and stigma surrounding mental health. So if you were to go to therapy, if you were to be in an inpatient unit at a behavioral health hospital, if you were to be on antipsychotics, like whatever the case may be, anything that had to do with mental health, it was looked down upon and you were shamed for it. So saving face is a huge thing, especially when it comes to mental health. Silence and suppression is a huge one. So when it comes to emotional expression, again, did not exist. Emotional expression is often discouraged in our families, in our culture, in our communities. A lot of time, what this unfortunately leads to individuals internalizing struggles rather than speaking openly about it. So when it comes to struggling with anything such as depression, anxiety, PTSD, so on and so forth, it's not talked about. We just sit with it for pretty much our whole lives until we get to the point where we're ready to burst open. With me, I have always been an anxious kid. I think I got it from my grandmother, who is very anxious, but she's the last person to admit that. And I don't even know how to translate anxiety, the term anxiety, into our language of Lao. But I have always been an anxious kid. And I remember, when I actually learned about anxiety towards the end of high school, going into college, my parents were just like, there's no such thing. I don't know what that means. I have family members who have been diagnosed with depression, and that was completely unheard of. That was like, no, you just need to eat better or stop eating sugar, which where the hell is the correlation there? I will never forget one day when my dad sat me down and he was like, "So your brother has depression. He says he's depressed." And I remember my initial reaction was crying, because at that time I was more aware of mental health and the challenges that my family was going through, challenges that I was going through. I was a little bit more aware. And I was like, "Yeah, he probably does." And he's like, how come?" And I was like, "I'm literally in 10th grade. I don't know what to tell you, but just listen to him." And kind of going off of like the silence and suppression, a lot of folks tend to perceive having mental health issues as a weakness. So mental illness may be seen as a moral of familial failure, leading to denial or avoidance. So again, like, oh, you can't be anxious and depressed and also be a strong person, which is crazy to me because sorry y'all, my mic's about to crash out. I think it's time for a new one soon. Bear with me. Let me switch out the AirPods. Okay, I think that's better. Maybe. I don't know. I'm so sorry, y'all. Yo, I'm struggling. So let's also now talk about the model minority myth. So the unrealistic expectations. This stereotype promotes the idea that all Asian Americans are successful, academically gifted, self-resilient, creating immense pressure to perform, and discouraging acknowledgement of struggles. So, how many of you guys have been high achieving in school and were academically gifted? How many of you found yourself having to grow up a lot faster when you were younger because you were the oldest sibling? How many of you felt so much pressure and sometimes even unspoken pressure to do well in everything that you do? Out of all those things I've asked, I can guarantee either you relate to all of it, some of it, one of it. And if you don't, you consider yourself lucky. I came from a family who did not believe in physical punishment. It was mainly verbal. I think my parents knew better not to spank me or hit me because I had a big ass mouth when I was a kid. And like, I never, like, I, as early as I can remember, as early as I can remember, I knew what children's services was. So I knew that, like, if someone were to lay a hand on me, if someone were to hit me, punch me, like, I was an op, dude. I was not even low key. I was the op. I was literally the person. I was a blabbermouth. I would tell anybody anything. So I think my parents knew better not to hit us, but I truly believe in my heart that they also didn't believe in physical punishment themselves. A lot of the punishments were verbal, and it was mainly from my dad. And my dad was more so the harsher parent, but as I got older, I understood why, and I know where it comes from, especially him being an immigrant and a refugee. So I've definitely built up a lot of like grace and forgiveness for him in regards to how I was raised. I mean, low-key dad, if you're listening, I'm still scared of you when you raise your voice, but I feel like that had turned me into a people pleaser at a young age because I was trying to figure out every single way to not make dad mad. So I'm very grateful that, I didn't have the experiences that some of my peers did. And it breaks my heart hearing those stories because I also know where those things root from. When it comes to mental health struggles, especially when thinking about like the model minority, there's like an invisibility of struggles. So this kind of goes back to the saving face aspect. If you were struggling, you masked it. If you had issues, you masked it. Mental health issues in AAPI families, communities are often dismissed or ignored because they don't fit the dominant narrative. Again, there's this idea of like, we got to be at the top. We have to be academically gifted, number one, all that. And I can honestly say that, like, I know, like, I definitely felt that pressure of like needing to be the best. But at the same time, I just really didn't give a shit. Like, I remember, like, there were a couple of Asian students in my class, and some of them were top students of the class. And I remember I never really compared myself to them because I just knew I was so much different. And I didn't feel the need to compete. But I could tell you right now, like, of those students, there was definitely competition there. Immigration and generational trauma. This is huge. Huge, huge, huge. Generational trauma exists, especially in Asian households. Let's talk about like acculturation stress. So, first generation immigrants often face language barriers, isolation, employment stress, while second-gen children may struggle more so to bridge cultural gaps between home and society, feeling the need to fit in, wanting to fit in, not really knowing where they fit in, and absorbing like different cultures. I think that when we think about intergenerational conflict, so the differences in different generations and different cultures, the different values between immigrant parents and American-born children can lead to identity confusion, familial tension. Now, this is huge. I definitely experienced this. So when it came to my upbringing, I went to a predominantly white Catholic school, and obviously both my parents are refugees and immigrants. And I remember all the time growing up, my parents would always tell me, "You're not like them. You are not American. You are not," and they when they said that, they meant it in like, "You are not white American." Bet your bottom dollar I was American. I was born here, baby. But they would always say things like, "You are not white and you are not like those kids." They usually said that anytime I had an attitude, anytime I wanted to go to a sleepover or a birthday party or hang out with my friends at the mall. There was so much of the, remember where you came from, you are not like them. And I think it actually took my parents some time to realize that me being raised in the States and them being raised very differently in their homeland, completely different. And I think as I built trust with my parents as I gotten older, they started to accept it more. And they start, and even my dad tells me now, like, the time the times have changed. And I think that what helped my dad was he surrounded himself with a lot of like younger generation adults at work. He is one of like the oldest people at his job, so he's around a lot of young folks. So he is learning from them, and he's learning that like what I went through and me being raised in the States is very different and it's very normal. In regards to like my behaviors, my attitudes. And then obviously, like, I don't, my parents, at least I want to speak for my parents, but my parents, I don't believe, had an understanding of childhood development or developmental stages. Because let's kind of dive into the cultural value of filial piety. Filial piety, it was created during the Confucianism, or I don't know. What am I saying? So filial piety was basically a value created by Confucius, I think. And it basically states you have an obligation and you must honor your parents, your ancestors, and your elders. Nowhere does that say, but all humans should be respected. Now, as kids, we are raised to respect our elders, our parents, and our ancestors in every way possible, shape, form. We The moment, like, have you guys ever had an interaction with like an elder or your mom, and she is getting mad at you and she's asking you a question, and then you answer and she goes, "Why are you talking back to me?" Girl, because you just asked me a question. Now, I'm also an Aries, so I had a big mouth. Let me take a sip of my Gatorade. Hold on. I'm an Aries, so I am a fire sign and I am a fireball. I definitely was a big back talker in my youth. I was a brat. I truly was spoiled by my parents, and them spoiling me led to me being a brat, I guess. But yeah, my mom would ask me questions, or anytime like our parents would try to scold us and we have some form of a justification. I can understand why my mom and dad were upset with me when I was a teenager, because I probably didn't know how to respond appropriately. But now, as an adult, I've learned how to effectively communicate with them. And to some extent, they still think I'm back talking. But what's most important here is stating your intention before you even get into it. Something I like to say, and before I even like respond, is, "I love you. And I don't want you to think I'm talking back. I just need you to hear me and listen to what I have to say." And that tends to work out pretty well for me. I can't guarantee it's going to work for everyone. But again, my parents have come a long way with understanding like being raised in the States, even though they weren't born and raised here. I think me having those conversations with them definitely healed a part of my inner child, because I just felt like as a kid, like they just never listened to me. Which then led me to being rebellious and sneaky and just not telling them anything. I was a chronic internalizer, and I was also a sneaky teen. I didn't tell them half the things I did in high school. And mom and dad, if you're listening, you're not dumb. And I know you probably know that I probably did some of these things. But I think overall, like, I turned out great. I turned out great, honestly. I feel like I turned out okay. Anyways, going back to like the generational trauma. So trauma from the war and displacing that trauma onto their children is, again, a common thing that happens. So my mom escaped during the Secret War. My dad escaped during the fall of, like, right after the fall of Saigon in Vietnam, and they didn't meet till they came to the United States. So they have two separate escape stories, essentially. But I feel very, very, very blessed and grateful that they never displaced or projected the traumas they experienced from the war onto me. If anything, they actually shared their stories with me, and they shared, like, actually, hold on, let me take that back. So, on some level, they didn't, but at the same time, they did. My mom would tell me, like, I think when I was a teenager, like, anytime I didn't get something that I wanted, she would always say, like, I swam across the Mekong for you. Like, is that not enough? So, in some sense, yeah, they displaced and they projected the trauma that they experienced, but not to the point where they, made me feel guilty for doing it. I think that especially if your parents had immigrated or were refugees during a time of political warfare, or just like, yeah, like political warfare, I feel like a lot of those folks who immigrated have some level of PTSD or a trauma and stress related disorder. And there's always this, like, there's always that language of, I came here for you. I did this for you. I left my country for you. I left my country for you to have a better life. And as a therapist, I want to tell you guys who are listening, it is okay if you've ever thought in your head, I didn't ask for this. I didn't ask you to leave your country. And I think that when we think about filial piety and that view, that value of like having an obligation towards your parents, your elders, your ancestors, that kind of falls in line with that filial piety of that guilt trip of, your parents left their country during a very torrential time for you to have a better future. And for me personally, I always had a very clear understanding of that. So I worked so hard to get through high school, get through college, get my master's degree. And what I feel very blessed and fortunate about is that my parents tried to make me go to med school. They tried to make me become a pharmacist. They wanted me to go into like business and marketing and stuff. And then they realized that I fucking suck at math. I mean, it's not even a realization. My parents knew all along that I was terrible at math. And I think when I first declared my major, right before I started college, I declared pharmacy or pre-med or whatever the hell it was, bio, I don't remember. And then I took the math entry exam. Tell me why they put me in remedial math. The class was called elementary level math. I'm not even shitting you. And when my dad saw that, he's like, maybe pharmacy school's not for you. And I'm like, hey, you think? And so I then changed my major, like first week of school, I changed my major to business marketing, because I was like, I'm pretty good at marketing. I do social media, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw that it required a high level of math. And then I was like, fuck, no, I don't want to do this. And also the reason why I wanted to go to business school was because I wanted to make a lot of money. Let's be so for real. I probably would have been in the same place that I am now. And then I found social work. And both my parents were like, what? And they're like, we're paying for you to go to school and we want you to come out of all of it with a good paying job. No. And I was like, yes, it's my education. Yes, you are helping me financially with it, but this is my education. I want to be happy in what I want to do. And me and my parents went back and forth for some time until they finally realized, like, you know what? You just got to do what makes you happy. And I remember having like a cry of relief because for once I felt like my parents heard me. That is not the case for a lot of AAPI folks. I know so many people who are forced through school, forced into a field they want nothing to do with, forced into a field where their dreams and aspirations are so far out of their reach and out of their capacity of what they're doing. And it hurts my heart because I have been blessed with such understanding parents in that aspect, but I also understand the generational pressures that come with it because our parents had nothing. Our parent, like when I say our, I don't mean all, but like a lot of our parents didn't have anything and they just want what's best for us. So they try to live vicariously through us. And I think what helped me, again, I'm an Aries, I'm a back talker, and I stand up for myself and advocate for myself. So I push back the grain pretty hard when it came to declaring my major as social work. Now I'm a therapist. I am a successful therapist, I want to believe, and my parents see that. And they couldn't be happier. I really appreciate their support. They may not necessarily know what I do still or what I deal with. But I try to explain, but it just gets to the point where I'm like, I don't have the capacity for this. So while we're continuing to deconstruct the stigmas surrounding mental health, let's talk about the access and representation in mental health care. So one of the biggest barriers is language and cultural barriers. Unfortunately, there is a lack of culturally competent and multilingual therapists in the world, in the United States. But we are growing. We are growing. And I am so happy and so proud to be part of that. There are underdiagnoses and misdiagnoses because the Asian experience could present very differently, in the sense of like anxiety, depression, like post-traumatic stress. There are a lot of overlap in like the general criteria of, the what you see in the DSM, but I feel like in Asian American specifically, some of these things present very differently. And then also, I kind of talked about this like lack of representation. So there is few Asian American mental health professionals out there, but like I said, we are growing. We are growing. And because I'm a frequent flyer on TikTok, I like to say. And I have met so many Asian American professionals in the mental health field. It makes me so proud to know them, and I feel like I'm part of like this little club. And it's just awesome seeing how much we're growing as a community in the mental health field. And I like push for it, and I'm a strong advocate for it. And I've been told by some professionals that I've inspired them to follow the track of becoming a therapist or working in the mental health field. Now, with that being said, as we are, finishing up deconstructing the stigmas, when it comes to emerging resilience and advocacy together, again, because there's not that much representation of Asian American mental health providers, it is very hard to find groups. It's hard to find support groups. It's hard to find just like a community of healing. But I am so proud to know that there are communities and there's actually practices out there that really, really, really focus on like Asian American healing. There are places around the country that do community-based healing, whether that's mutual aid groups, cultural practices, community spaces, youth-led movements. So younger generations are obviously getting more increasingly vocal. So using social media and art to destigmatize mental health. If you are a listener and you are part of those movements, I just want to say thank you for being so resilient and so brave to put to be to just be out there, because as we know, in Asian cultures, like, that is unheard of. But I really feel like the new generation, and I'm going to throw myself in there too as part of that generation, we are breaking the stigma and we are working so hard to destigmatize mental health. But baby, we still got lots of work to do. And that is okay. That is okay. It makes me really proud and almost like emotional seeing all these AAPI young folks like really fight to destigmatize mental health, because it gives me hope that, you know, we're going to be okay in the future. So as we deconstructed the stigma around Asian mental health, let's now get into the cultural layer of it. I kind of touched on this a little bit while we were deconstructing, but when it comes to the cultural aspect, I think some overlap and similarities across Asian communities and Asian families is the filial piety, the family honor, so making sure that you're saving face, not making your family look bad. The resilience. So again, like we hear a lot about like the eldest daughter syndrome and how a lot of specifically eldest daughters kind of take on the role of the second or third parent in the home and have to take care of their siblings. That eldest daughter then becomes a chronic people pleaser, a hard worker, an overworker. And again, like even though it might be an unspoken expectation in the home, sometimes they just put it on themselves because they, again, are brought up on the value of filial piety and that obligation to your parents, elders, and ancestors. When it comes to generational trauma and healing, so with generational trauma, especially in immigrant and refugee families, we may not realize that it's happening until we're a little bit older. I'm noticing that a lot more of the younger generation, so like I would say like 12th grade and up, so or 11th grade and up, are starting to realize more and more like what generational trauma is and how it impacts them. I think that a lot of the times with generational trauma, the language barriers, the emotional suppression, the shame cycles even is what makes a person. And sometimes what makes a person then eventually breaks that person. So thinking about, you know, for some folks, their parents don't speak English that well. And with that, now the children become the translator. They become the bill payer. They become the maid, the servant, like just the adult in the home. And this kind of ties into emotional maturity as well. So it is very common and it is very possible that we may be more emotionally mature than our parents are. And that's the part that fucking hurts sometimes, right? How can, like, sometimes we feel like we have to parent our parents, right? So the lack of emotional maturity is one of those things that causes a lot of tension between parents and children of Asian families. And I think that for me, I have a lot of emotional maturity, and I can honestly say that, like, my parents lack it, but not to the extent where I feel tension in our relationship, but there's a lot of misunderstandings, miscommunications, and I have learned to have a lot of patience with my parents. So I know that it is not my job to teach them how to be emotionally mature. It's not my job to teach them these things because they are my parents and they've lived, you know, a longer life than I have. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not afraid of holding my parents accountable or, you know, talking to them about how something made me feel. I want to touch on politics real quick. I'm not going to get too much into it, but I've been noticing that a lot of my AAPI counterparts and I share the same experiences of having parents that have very different political views than us. End quote. That's all I'm going to say. Maybe that could be a discussion for a later episode, but if you're listening and you have very different political views than your parents, and we're talking like having a hard time upholding a conversation with them because their views are just different. I'm trying to be very careful about what I say. I can highly I could relate to that for sure. So with that, how healing can look different across generations is very different. So I feel like for me, healing was obviously going to therapy and also just being open and honest with my parents. I think my parents did a good job as I got older into like my early adulthood to promote and foster an environment where I feel like I could talk to them about anything. Because once I started to see that they were able to understand me more and were willing to listen to me more, that's where I opened up more. And I think as they, they picked up on the pattern of like, if we listen to her more or if we trust her more, she will be able to come forth and talk about X, Y, or Z with us. And that's what happened. So, how do we break the stigma? How are people breaking the stigma? I'm curious. As for me, I'm breaking the stigma by being very open about my mental health, being very open about my own personal challenges, alongside with understanding and highlighting the challenges of AAPI individuals and also children of refugees, children of immigrants. And this goes beyond just the AAPI community, but I'm highlighting them mainly because that is the community I am part of. And May is AAPI month, so let's get it. I think that when it comes to breaking the stigma as well, a lot of Asian folks avoid therapy. And what helps change that is honestly people like me. People like me who are Asian American, who are openly talking about mental health. And I always tell clients, I'm never going to force you to see to come to see me. I'm never going to force you to go to therapy. I tell every single person, you go to therapy when you feel like you are ready to make changes, to really dive deep into what you need to heal from. That is when you go to therapy. But I also want to destigmatize that going to therapy doesn't make you weak. If anything, it makes you strong. It makes you resilient. It makes you the epitome of what self-love and self-care is, which is prioritizing yourself and your health. Your mental health is just as important as your physical health. And I try to hammer that into people's heads, but the reality of it is not everybody falls for it, especially the older generation. I so wish more folks and more Asian Americans or just Asian folks in the older generations would at least try therapy. But here's the thing, going back to the stigma surrounding saving face and not being perceived as weak and all that stuff. That is such a heavy value that sticks in their head that it makes me want to throw up. I can honestly say that I used to be like that, where I felt the need to save face. I felt the need to go to the temple every Sunday. I felt the need to be this perfect daughter and this perfect child. But baby girl, I am not that. And I am not afraid to make it very clear that I'm not religious, that I don't go to the temple all the time. I don't pray. I am in a field that a lot of people look down on and don't really understand. But what's really awesome is still getting support from my aunties, the elders, the elders and the aunties and the uncles, getting the support from them, knowing that regardless of what I do, I'm always going to be successful with it. And I think that kind of helps destigmatize just a smidge. But again, it takes more than just me. Okay? I need y'all's help. Please help. I think also that there is a huge role of religion and spirituality that plays in seeking help. And a lot of it is, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand with like seeking help from a doctor. A lot of Asian folks don't believe in modern day medicine because there's a lot of like holistic approaches and holistic practices that they still follow. And, you know, I'm not going to yuck your yum. If that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. I'm not going to, you know, force you to do anything different. But, you know, going to the doctors is even sometimes looked down upon. So I think that lastly, just kind of tying all that up, I'm also like, how am I breaking a stigma? Hold on. Let me take a sip of my Gatorade. I'm dehydrated. I think one of the biggest ways I'm breaking the stigma of mental health, and I don't know if this is really a mental health stigma, but I have a full sleeve of tattoos, if you guys didn't know. I have a full sleeve of tattoos. My mom hates tattoos. My dad actually really likes them. He sees it as like artwork, and he actually really likes my tattoos. My mom has learned to love my tattoos as well. And my mom hates tattoos so much that when I got my first one, she almost passed out. And something that just clicked with me when I had a conversation with her about it, because I did it without telling her, was, okay, so there's ink on my arms. There's tattoos on my arms. I look very different from a lot of the Asian women in my community. What does that have to do with who I am on the inside? I still am a practicing clinician. I am married. I have a master's degree. I own a home. What do these tattoos have anything to do with the person that I am? Now, as we know, in old generations, tattoos were looked at as gang affiliation, trashy, you know, uneducated. But this is how I'm breaking the stigma. I can have a full sleeve of tattoos and still be educated, and still be knowledgeable, and still be successful. And I want anybody who's listening in on this, just because you have tattoos does not change who you are on the inside. I think that was something that really stuck with my parents when I had that conversation with them, because they had a realization of like, oh shit, she's right. And I kind of had a moment where I was like, yup, got him. And I think that it's a really good feeling to get to your parents in that way. So I think that's a one way that I've really challenged my parents and broken the stigma. And my brother also has tattoos and he's successful. And, you know, I mean, now they like brag about my tattoos. Anytime I meet a friend of theirs, they like pull my sleeve up. They're like, look at her tattoos. Don't you like them? And a lot of my tattoos also are very meaningful. Every single one of my tattoos are very meaningful. So yeah, that's breaking the stigma for me. So, a question that I want to pose to you guys, something that I want to have you guys think about is what is something that you are unlearning as an Asian adult? Growing up, we were conditioned to learn certain values that probably don't sit well with us now. So I really would be interested to know what some of you are unlearning as an adult. Could this include, you know, unlearning filial piety from, and not in the sense of like disrespecting your elders, parents, and ancestors, but more so doing things because you want to and doing things out of the goodness of your heart, not necessarily doing things that you feel obligated to and have an unspoken expectation on. Now, this, I want to remind you guys, this is all based on my personal experiences. I am not here to force anyone to change or to make anyone change, but more so share a compilation of experiences that I've had alongside with hoping that it reaches someone that also has similar experiences. And I hope you feel like you're not alone. We're all in this together. We're all here to really work on destigmatizing mental health and generational trauma. I really hope that this episode wasn't a giant trauma bond, because that's the last thing I need it to be. But I really hope that you guys who are listening in are taking some of this information in and also knowing that Big Sis is here. I am so proud to be Asian American, and I am very blessed and grateful to come from the family that I do. I know that not a lot of folks are were fortunate enough to have parents like mine, but I also have a lot of crossover and overlap in similar experiences. And overall, I just want you to know that, again, you're not alone, and mental health is a strength and not a weakness. And I really hope that you consider getting therapy. I'm just kidding, but seriously, if it works wonders. Now, I will say that a lot of individuals report to me that sometimes they tried therapy out for the first time, they didn't like it. You know what? You may not find the right match the first time. You just got to keep trying. I promise you, there is someone for everyone. And I really hope that you get the help that you deserve. And as for that, I would drop my mic right now, but it's already on its last leg. I gotta get a new mic. I really hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. I hope you found some insight and felt less alone hearing my own experiences. I invite you guys to share your stories. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot me a message. And I hope that maybe I could have a future follow-up of this episode and talk a little bit more about Asian mental health. But overall, I appreciate you tuning in and listening in. I am so glad to be back. It's been a whirlwind. This summer's gonna be a whirlwind, so episodes might be spaced out a little bit as well, but I'm just gonna keep on keeping on. I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening into this episode of Extra Pickles, Please. I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.